In this episode, we'll discuss the evolving dynamics of community investment and glimpse into the future of philanthropy. We'll explore the Zed Zurich Foundation's mission, delving into their transformative project, grant-making processes, and the art of measuring true impact. Let's make a social impact. Today, we're joined by Emily Jutblat, the Head of Finance, Impact and Operations, and Dirk Gavronska, Digital Transformation Lead at Zed Zurich Foundation. So Dirk, I'd love to start by asking you to share a bit about Zed Zurich Foundation and your mission.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having us today. So we're a Swiss foundation launched in 1973. In those 50 years, we have shifted from a local charity into a globally recognized organization, transforming the lives of nearly 11 million people. And so only last year, we impacted more than 2.7 million lives, transformed another 140,000 lives, run active programs in 50 plus countries, and supported over 350 communities globally. Our goal is to empower vulnerable people to create better futures for themselves. We focus on areas where vulnerability is the most acute, and don't just provide funding. We work closely with local organizations and actively participate in the programs we support. We've identified four key pillars. I'll tell you more about it: adapting to climate change, improving mental well-being, enabling social equity, and responding to crisis. Not arbitrarily, but because these issues are increasingly urgent and complex, affecting individuals, communities, and society.
Great. And maybe you could share some examples of those four key pillars of how you're kind of bringing that to life.
Yeah, happy to. So with UNICEF, we promote mental well-being among young people worldwide, allowing them to build their futures and reach their full potential. We provide them with the capacity to think, feel, and learn. Our three-year partnership will equip 400,000 adolescents and 150,000 caregivers in seven countries with information, skills, and strategies to care for their and each other's mental well-being. It will also support a global communication campaign that aims to reach 30 million people and promote positive conversations and connections that increase awareness, knowledge, and action around mental well-being. About enabling social equity, we empower youth with the skills, education, and resources they need to succeed. Our partnership with Junior Achievement Africa and JA Worldwide will empower 550,000 young people across Africa to succeed as both innovative job creators and well-qualified job seekers. This collaboration will enable thousands of youth in nine countries to access programs that set them on the path to success, not just as individuals, but as leaders who influence positive change within their communities. In the adapting to climate change area, we focus on helping disadvantaged communities adapt to climate change through the Zurich Flood Resilience Alliance, which is a multi-sector cooperation launched in 2013, funded by the Zed Zurich Foundation. It focuses on finding practical ways to help communities in developed and developing countries strengthen their resilience to flood risk. Members include well-known organizations such as Concern Worldwide, Mercy Corps, Plan International Practical Action, and the IFRC. And using Zurich's risk expertise as a global insurer, the Alliance helps customers and communities reduce the devastating impacts of floods even before a flood hits. We call this flood resilience.
Wow, that's such a huge impact that you shared there. Some really notable achievements, and I love how you're taking kind of Zed Zurich's skills and applying them and to the work that you're doing as well. I also know that your work is also aimed to engage Zurich Insurance's employees in doing good. Yes. How do you collaborate with them and empower them to drive impact in their communities as well?
Well, we do this in many different ways. For example, My Impact, our giving program, allows Zurich employees to take their activism journey to the next level. They can donate to 600,000 charities and get their donation matched, create fundraising campaigns themselves, and find volunteering opportunities. And the great news is that in the last 3 years, more than 20,000 employees have signed up to the program. And in 2023, the total donation amount, including matching, reached a new record high of almost 4.5 million Swiss francs. Another thing we focus on is volunteer leave. So all permanent and fixed-term employees of the Zurich Group are entitled to a minimum of 1 day of paid volunteer leave each day. Many business units offer more than just the minimum. So in 2023 alone, Zurich employees tracked over 130,000 volunteer hours also through the My Impact platform. And speaking of volunteering, we also offer skills-based volunteering, for example, hackathons, and as part of our cooperation with Junior Achievement Africa. We are currently developing a new skills-based volunteering platform called ZZF University that we pilot with JA Africa and then will open up to other program partners afterwards. Other things include the pro bono schemes we have, for example, with legal, collaborating with different partners, employees providing service to individuals or even entire organizations. They offer free legal advice. They have done so in the US for many years, and this is now also available in other countries, including the UK and Australia. And those of you who heard about the year when we were launched, last year we celebrated our 50th anniversary campaign. And as a result of that, we recognized the incredible impact of all our employees who volunteered 50 hours or more by giving them a special gift. Also, we worked with people who had created fundraisers. Whenever they met their donation goal, they got a higher than usual matching rate, which was 150%. And highly welcomed by our donors. Another thing we do is we support and encourage those Zurich employees who go the extra mile, who give their time as board members or trustees of charitable organizations. We know that charities worldwide desperately need dedicated, skilled individuals who can give their time to steer the direction and strategy of their organizations and ultimately maximize their impact. And therefore, being a trustee is a great way to volunteer to share one's business skills. And volunteering is a great way to learn and develop new skills and improve one's mental well-being as well. So to enable more employees to become trustees, we also offer a development program, for example, for senior leaders of the future in Ireland and also high talent women in the United States. And then we present the Community Hero Awards to recognize Zurich employees who are going above and beyond to support their communities. And here are two examples. The Climate Fresk Facilitators team empowers others with the knowledge, skills, values, and attitudes to act as agents of change in climate action. And I was lucky enough to attend one of these sessions, and I truly enjoyed it and learned so much. Another example is a Zurich employee in Portugal who is a dedicated volunteer and an advocate for promoting mental well-being and mental health prevention for young people. Her work has been instrumental in ensuring the success of the so-called For You program, which reached over 19,000 students, 1,100 teachers, 700 operational assistants, 500 families, and 100 public schools across 59 municipalities. And last but not least, our Champions Network. We could not do everything without this network of passionate people on the ground who help us run our programs. By inspiring and empowering others, they mobilize employees to become activists in their communities and beyond. There's quite a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah, I was just thinking exactly that. Some really great best practices there, Dirk, that sounds like you've evolved over the years to really consider how to bring in all different types of employees in the organization and also globally as well. So thank you. Really great examples. Thank you. So Emily, I'd love to kind of turn to community investment, and maybe you could walk us through the foundation's grant making process overall.
So first and foremost, I would say actually that ZZF Foundation, we are not just the funder. So we're also working really closely with our partners to create value in addition to provide funding. And we also look to create very strong partnerships. So one example is the Flood Resilience Alliance. We've been working with them since 2013 to successfully develop and implement the flood resilience measurement for communities, which we call the FRMC process. And it's now in over 400 communities globally. But if you look back at our grant making process, first we look at where is the vulnerability the greatest. So with each grant, we assess the ability to generate impact for vulnerable people as one of the most important factors. And this is then also the first step of the process to identify the need. And we also do research and gathering info. And then based on this, a grant proposal is created. And it should also be in line with our strategy, obviously. And then the approval level of a grant is according to our organization rules. And this range from a single approval by the head of the foundation to approval by the full board.
That's super interesting. And what happens then after this approval has been given? What's the process?
So after the grant has been approved, then we formalize this through a contract. And we work very closely with the partners through the duration of the grant as well. So at least yearly, we are having conversations and we speak then about impact, budgets, development of the grants. And we also provide capacity building to our partners where there's a need. And one example is the work we are doing with the Cyber Peace Institute. So they support NGOs worldwide in cyber protection. And this has also been advocated through our charities network, so the charities can minimize any data risk that their beneficiaries would be put at.
I'm curious to know kind of what are some of the challenges that you face during the grant making process, and how do you see social impact professionals and technology can help address those in the future?
Yeah, sure. So first, if we look at this question from a micro level, then we know actually that technology brings both opportunities and risk. So on one hand, technology can simplify processes, but sometimes it can also make it more complex if it's designed in the wrong way. So it really depends how the process and the tool is working. If technology is used correctly, then we think that it can lead to the following positive effects. For example, less manual processes, reduced risk for errors. Normally, you also have the audit track by having data in a system. Approvals are automatically registered. You have built-in controls, and you also have then data, which gives you insight to make decisions. But if we broaden the discussion on technology to also include a broader society, we know that technology can also increase inequalities between those who has access to it and those who has not. And one of the driving force in inequality across countries has actually been technology progress in both advanced and developing countries, because it increased the premiums on skills, and then it subsidized the low skill inputs. So just give an example, some of the low skill inputs can maybe be replaced by technology like a machine. So this is also the negative side of it.
That's really interesting, and to look at it from both angles. I guess what I'd also like to talk about is one of the most important parts of all this work, which is the impact and how you measure that. So do you have any specific metrics or success stories that stand out to you?
Yeah, sure. So the CEDCIRC Foundation, we have together with our partner developed a very robust way to measure impact. So it allows the charter for the individual needs of the programs, but at the same time, it gives the opportunity to consolidate our impact numbers. So Dirk already mentioned this. We work in different pillars, and the programs can be pretty different to each other. So then obviously you cannot do it all in the same way. You need to find a way that you can also then consolidate. But it all actually starts at grant level. And there we break down the impact on people into two categories. So positively impacted lives and transformed lives. So in a nutshell, what differs these two categories is that the transformed lives, it's a deeper and more long-lasting impact. And with the launch of our evolved strategy in 2024, we have now added a new layer to this impact framework. And this is the system level change. And this looks at the system influenced and the level of influence, because we think for creating lasting impact and change, then we also need to look at influencing the society. So if we look back now, what we did, for example, in 2023, we actually then celebrated our 50 years anniversary as a catalyst for positive change. We also launched our new acceleration strategy for the next 12 years. we also seen significant developments of the foundation's three strategic pillars. Dirk already mentioned these: adapting to climate change, improving mental well-being, and enabling social equity. And we also now have a fourth pillar, which is responding to crisis. And we plan to double our impact in the next 4 years. This also Dirk mentioned, we, as a corporate foundation, we work very closely with the Zurich Insurance Company and its employees. And we also recognize the employees that go the extra mile. And I have two examples to add to Dirk's ones. So we have two stories of outstanding employees, which is Mahmoud and Barry. So Mahmoud is working for Zurich, Belgium, and he has spent 500 hours of his time volunteering in 2023. And just to tell you a little bit more about Mahmoud, he arrived in Belgium in 2015 and he was fleeing the conflict in Syria. And his outlook was bleak, and he was living in the shelter, and it was very difficult for him. And it was very different to how he lives now. So he started then actually to volunteer, and he then made friends there. He could improve his French and English. And he volunteered with a charity called Serve the City. And actually, by chance, he encountered there an employee, and he gained a full-time position with that charity. But he left that position to join Zurich in 2022. So he had a new full-time role, but still he continued to volunteer for this charity, and he clocked up to 500 hours in 2023. And for those of you who wonder how he does this, he goes out for 6 hours at a time on Saturdays and Sundays. And he also organized team building and different sessions with the other Serve the City volunteers. So this is, I think, really outstanding what he's doing there. And he says, we need everyone to work together to make a difference. And he also sees this happening. And another amazing story is Barry Cantwell. And with the support of Seth Zurich's Foundation Double Matching Campaign, he raised enough for a purchase of a minibus to provide vital transport for those living with Alzheimer's. And he then did this fundraising, he reached the finish line in both the London and Dublin marathons in October 2022. And he raised money for the Alzheimer's Society. He raised actually $65,000. So very impressive story as well.
Wow. Thank you for sharing those really inspiring examples. I feel inspired myself. So yeah, that's amazing. And you touched on what you were hoping for in the future and looking ahead. So from the foundation's perspective, what are the key expectations that you have for companies in terms of corporate social responsibility and sustainability moving forward?
One of our key expectations is actually that our work is more needed than ever. And when we summarize the findings of this year's Global Risk Report, which is developed by the World Economic Forum in partnership with Zurich Insurance Company, this report presents some of the most severe risks we face. Now, I think now we move a little bit into negative outlook, because 2024, we really see the world expiring a period of significant technological change and economic uncertainty. But there is a lot of combined crisis of climate and conflict. And to support this increased need that we see arising, we have launched a new four-year plan. And in the next strategic cycle, we have the ambition to create brighter futures and more opportunities for 25 million vulnerable people. And with that, we then really aim to double our impact compared to previous cycle. And if we just jump in a little bit to the findings of this report, or the five key takeaways, and our expectation also for companies, as you said, in terms of corporate social responsibility, the first one is the time is to act big and not to talk loud. It's really now the time to act. And the report really highlights that immediate action is needed to avoid long-term crisis, to avoid potential devastating consequences also for vulnerable populations worldwide. And some of the key risks that we face, obviously, is the climate crisis. There's interstate armed conflicts and lack of economic opportunities. So we really see this as a call to action also for the private sector. The next point would be really to be pragmatic on the climate, so adapt and do this through resilience building. And the consequence of climate change, it dominates all these three time horizons that's mentioned in the report. Extreme weather events are on the top list in 2024. And then over the next decade, a lot of risks are environmental. So, I mean, I think most people are aware of the climate change topic, and it's really also here on the agenda for us. It's really key expectations is for companies to continue to support adaptation to climate change and also the net zero ambition. The third one is really looking at the youth, so how their outlook is, and there is an increasing vulnerability of youth and the potential impact on the prospect for their future. So here also, we think there's an urgent need to double our efforts in building economic resilience among young people. Also, the fourth point, also not a very uplifting one, is coping with permanent crisis. Because of all these interconnections, there is an escalation of humanitarian crisis. For example, as I mentioned, the interstate armed conflicts, and there is risk for more tensions. We have launched, as I mentioned, we have now a fourth pillar, the responding to crisis pillar. And what we also want to do, we have a large scale effort to mainstreaming the mental health and support in crisis responses, because it's very important also to address mental well-being in times of crisis. And the last point we want to raise from the support as well is really the compelling case of prevention. It's always important to look at ways to strengthen the resilience of system, communities, and people. And we have a strong belief that prevention is the best form of protection.
Well, that report sounds very in-depth. I'm definitely going to take a read of that afterwards. And I think just based on what you said around the expectation around taking action, that's definitely something we've seen as well, and speak louder than words, right? And people are really expecting companies to take action in that sense and support their communities and society where they can. So I'd also love to just ask you both, kind of maybe Emily, starting with you, based on your experience in community investment, what are some best practices or lessons that you've learned that you could share with other foundations that are aiming to maximize their impact through grants and community initiatives?
Yes, so I will start with a quote. As I'm a previous auditor, actually. So it's what gets measured gets done. And with that, we're trying to say the first step to impact is actually to measure it, and thereafter be able to draw a conclusion on what's effective or not. And today, at the foundation, together with its partner, we are creating a brighter future for millions of people through prevention programs. But imagine what this number would be if each of us convinced at least three more stakeholders this year to do the same, or if each of us would actually engage with local charity organizations through donations or volunteering our time. And for this year, this is a challenge we are giving to ourselves, and we also hope others will accept that too.
Maybe in addition to what Emily has just said, there's probably a few other best practices and lessons learned that other foundations can consider to maximize the impact. First and foremost, engage your stakeholders. It sounds so easy and can be so hard to do. This includes involving community members, nonprofits, government agencies, and other stakeholders in the grant-making process. So seek their input and collaboration to ensure that funding priorities align with community needs and priorities. And then speaking of other parties, build relationships and collaborate with partners. That means cultivating strong relationships with other funders, nonprofits, government agencies, and community organizations based on trust, transparency, and mutual respect. So our strategic partnership with UNICEF is a great example of investing in building long-term relationships to foster collaboration, learning, and shared goals. And the Zurich Flood Resilience Alliance is another great example. Provide capacity building support to those nonprofits and community organizations because they may require support beyond financial assistance. So offer capacity building resources, technical assistance, and training opportunities to strengthen their organizational capacity and effectiveness. So for example, as an insurer, Zurich knows how to manage risk. We have managed risk for more than 150 years, and we are happy to share our experience with our partners. Listen and learn. Take the time to listen to the voices and perspective of those directly impacted. Learn from their experience, insights, and solutions to inform strategic decisions and programmatic interventions. And things will change, so be flexible and adaptive. Recognize that community needs priorities may evolve over time. Be willing to adapt your strategies and initiatives in response to changing circumstances, emerging trends, and stakeholder feedback. And as Emily very rightly said, measuring impact matters. So what does it entail? It means establishing clear goals, outcomes, and metrics to assess the impact of grants and community initiatives, and also regularly monitoring and evaluating progress toward achieving intended outcomes and using data and feedback to inform decision-making and program improvement. Now that you've achieved success, you've made a difference, you created impact, communicate and share your stories. So share stories of impact and success to inspire others and raise awareness about the importance of community investment. You can use various communication channels, including social media, newsletters, and events to amplify the voices of grantees and showcase the results of philanthropic effort. Be transparent and accountable. That's very important. Practice transparency and accountability in everything you do. Clearly communicate the rules, funding criteria, expectations, and timelines to applicants. Provide feedback on funding decisions whenever possible. And last but not least, stay committed for the long term. So creating impact requires sustained investment and commitment over long term. So avoid short-term one-off funding approaches and instead focus on building enduring relationships and supporting initiatives with lasting impact. So by adopting all these best practices and lessons learned, and we're trying our best there, foundations can enhance their effectiveness in community investment and contribute to positive social change in meaningful and sustainable ways.
That's great. I feel like we've got kind of a lot of the best practices there. So thank you so much both for sharing. And Dirk, you mentioned a little bit about kind of how things are constantly changing, right? So if we look into the future, and how do you think the landscape of community investment is evolving? And are there any trends or innovations that you think will shape the future of philanthropy and foundation work?
Yeah. Well, we do see this continually evolving, so driven by changing societal needs, technological advancements, and shifts in corporate and individual values. So several trends and innovations are likely to shape the future of philanthropy and foundation work, and to focus on impact and outcomes to start with. So there's a growing emphasis on measuring and maximizing the impact of philanthropic effort, as Emily has just explained. So foundations and donors are increasingly interested in funding programs and initiatives demonstrating tangible outcomes and measurable results. So our grants program is just one good example. Collaboration and partnerships. You know, we can't do everything on our own. We have to establish a collaborative approach to philanthropy by becoming more prevalent with foundations, nonprofits, governments, and businesses working together to address complex social challenges. It's not just a competition among foundations, but a cooperation. For example, we invited several charitable organizations with similar values to last year's summit to discuss how we could achieve more significant collective impact together, for example, through the pooling of resources, expertise, and networks. And it goes beyond money. So the Zurich Foundation is also a key supporter of One Young World, the largest global gathering of socially minded young leaders of the future. Each year, we take a delegation of young people to the summit, where they will hear from global leaders and inspiring stories from their peers. This year, we offer 15 places to aspiring young leaders working for the charity partners of the foundation or local Zurich business units. Globalization and international giving is another thing that I believe must be considered. Philanthropy is increasingly global in nature, with donors and foundations extending their reach beyond national borders to address global challenges such as poverty or health disparities and human rights violations. International giving and cross-border collaborations that are also supported by our giving platform are on the rise, driven by a shared sense of global interconnectedness. And then don't forget about data, don't forget about technology. So use strategic and data-driven giving approach. Adopt to a more strategic and data-driven approach to giving, leveraging technology and analytics to identify high-impact opportunities and allocate resources effectively. Data-driven decision-making enables donors to target their investments where they can make the most significant difference. And last but not least, I've mentioned that technological innovation and any advancements in technology are transforming philanthropy by enabling new forms of giving. Think of crowdfunding, digital platforms, etc. So technology facilitates greater transparency, accountability, and efficiency in those processes, including fundraising, grant making, and impact measurement. So overall, the future of philanthropy and foundation work is likely to be characterized by greater collaboration, innovation, and impact orientation, with a continued emphasis on addressing systemic issues, promoting equity and inclusion, and leveraging technology to drive positive change.
Thank you so much, Dirk. Well, I want to thank you both for joining. We're coming to the end of this episode, but before we end, is there any way people can get in touch with you or the Zurich Foundation? What's the best channels to reach out to you?
So thanks a lot, Amy. We have a great homepage, for example. It's www.zurich.foundation. That's a really good source to learn more about us and our programs. But people can also reach me and Dirk in LinkedIn. My name is Emily Utblad.
My name is Dirk Gavronska.
Perfect. Well, thank you both so much for sharing all these insights today. Really useful and inspirational for our audience. So thank you so much for joining, and have a great rest of the day. Expand your CSR knowledge with this curated playlist and explore the transformative power of philanthropy by clicking here. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.